The moment you realize you have to micromanage someone is the moment you hire the wrong person. When I see micromanagers, I say, okay, is it the wrong person that you're managing, or do you have an issue with trust?
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, a show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I'm your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is the Alec Broadfoot. He is the CEO and founder of Vision Spark, so it's bound to be electric. He leads Vision Spark, which is a consulting firm that has successfully completed over 200 number two leader searches for entrepreneurial companies. That's a lot, because those are some tough people to place, many of whom run on EOS, or the Entrepreneurial Operating System, and dozens of searches for other key team members with a 98% placement rate. That's very high. VisionSpark is recognized in 2023's Inc. 5000 list as one of the fastest growing companies in the country, which is amazing. And he is also a member of Strategic Coach, a sought after speaker, and the author of the number one Amazon bestseller, Hiring Your Right Number Two Leader, which is over his shoulder if you're watching online. Welcome to the show, Alec.
It's great to be here, Kenny.
I'm really excited about this. We were talking beforehand about some exciting things that you've had going, and hopefully they'll make some appearances throughout. But tell me today, Alec, what is on your mind?
So the concept of the leadership lid, or the law of the lid principle, have you ever heard of that?
John Maxwell and the 21 irrefutable laws. I forgot what number it is. That would be really impressive if I remembered. But
that is impressive, because that book's a good 20 years old now, right?
Yeah, I think I was in diapers. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, so that whole concept has been on my mind the last few days, and I think it's going to be part of another book down the road. The core idea is that the lid of a leader is going to be the lid for that organization or the team. Mm. So if a leader is a 5 out of 10, then that whoever they lead, their ability is not going to be more than a 5 out of 10 for that organization. But if their ability is a 9 out of 10, then that organization is and the people they lead, they have the potential to be a 9 out of 10.
Yeah. What's funny, as I actually was, I feel like I've mentioned the law of the lid multiple times recently. So it's a very timely topic. Now, mentioning if a leader, we'll just say the visionary, the senior most leader, is a 5 out of 10, have you seen where someone who might be that number two or another senior leader on the 10 or on the team comes in and maybe they're a 7 or an 8 out of 10? There's a tension there where the person they report to actually sits lower on their current capacity or capabilities than people reporting to them. Can you talk a little bit about that tension?
Yeah, I think it's number one, it's great to have a number two that has a very strong leadership potential. And a lot of visionaries, entrepreneurs, we're a little bit better at being leaders than we are at being managers. I guess it can be a tension, if the visionary is insecure about their abilities, right? But if they are secure in their unique ability, as Dan Sullivan calls it, and what they're great at, what they're passionate about, how they can make the biggest impact, then they have their number two that runs their company. And that's where you want a really good leader. You want a leader who is an 8, 9, 10.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm always thinking about, if something needs to be said, then there's something to it. The fact that we have to say, please don't operate a chainsaw in the bathtub or something like that, like all these weird warnings that we have, that means someone somewhere thought, what this bathtub, this bath experience needs? A good chainsaw. So when we think about the law of the lid, it has to be explained, it has to be at this point memorialized and probably one of the most read leadership books on the planet. From your perspective and the research and all the leaders that you work with, what is the current thinking or prevailing wisdom that makes having to educate people on that law a worthwhile endeavor?
Yeah. So the current thinking is that if you train or leaders get more better leadership skills, that they can increase their leadership ability. And I think there's some flaw to that thinking. I think there's only, sometimes there's only so much training that someone can do, but it's still not going to help them go from a 5 to a 10. Maybe it'll help them go from 5 to a 6 or a 7 to an 8. But it's that innate ability. As we evaluate thousands of candidates, we can tell who has strong leadership potential based on our evaluations. And oftentimes it's sad that we see these candidates that have incredible resumes, but they've been in the wrong position most of their career.
Really?
And we know that based on our evaluation of them. Yeah. So I think, yes, can you have your leaders be better leaders? Yes. But can you assume that they're going to grow drastically by training them and developing them? Mm-hmm. Probably not.
Yeah. And I've heard from some other people as well, in terms of that the 1 to 10 scale, mm-hmm. is that your upward mobility, that you don't make leaps. You take steps.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with all the assessments, evaluations, and research that you and VisionSpark have done, what does that gap look like? Mm-hmm. And how can, as leaders are either about, I imagine a bunch of people right now are self-evaluating themselves, and they're like, am I a 5 or am I a 9? Like, where am I? I was like, I was feeling pretty good before I was listening to Kenny and Alec, but fear not, the episode's not over. But how can people start to see what maybe where they're at and maybe what that gap is in terms of that potential? Because potential is a word, or capacity is a word that gets thrown around quite a lot. But I don't think, in my experience, people do a great job of saying what that is and what that looks like and how we can actually step into it.
Yeah. So like organizations where there's not a lot of change. So if you have a leader that maybe has 20 years experience in the industry and they're in your company and your company is on cruise control, you're not like growing by super high growth rates, you have it's systematized, all the playbook is all processed and you just have to manage that. I think that leader can do a great job and they can improve their leadership ability. So I have indispensable traits of every leader. So whether we're helping a client hire a second in command integrator, number two, or other leadership traits, we look at these 7 indispensable traits. The first one is they need to be a strategic thinker. And this is where I think my belief is, this is where there's high potential. So we measure, when we evaluate our candidates for our clients, we measure their mental acuity. Okay. So it's on a 1 to 9 scale. It should be 1 to 10, but it's 1 to 9. And individuals who are in that upper range, 6, 7, 8, 9, have huge potential to be strong leaders. They're strategic thinkers. Their learning style is more conceptual. They're great problem solvers, and it doesn't require them to have tons of experience for them to be effective leaders. Does that make sense?
Oh, 100%. Mm-hmm. Just that ability to figure things out, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And some of the other indispensable traits are they really need to be organized. And so we measure that trait as well. And what I mean by organization is that they have the ability to prepare, anticipate, be proactive. A lot of visionaries like me are like, hey, what's scheduled today? Oh, Kenny Lang, that podcast is today. Where someone who's a planner, the podcast with Kenny Lang is 30 days from now, and I'm working on getting preparing for it ahead of time. They're good planners. They can sort through things. Yeah. They can prioritize. Another one is they're process oriented, right? They have the ability to create processes, implement processes. They're a team player. They love people, great communicators, and then they love to coach and lead and manage people. And then the last one we were talking before we went live is fit, right? They have to fit with the culture, with their hiring manager. So those are the indispensable traits of leaders that we see.
I think that's phenomenal. I also love that you call them indispensable, because I think that there's a way that you could be who you were created to be, how you're wired and all those things. And your expression, I think it's fair to say your expression of those 7 may look a little different, right? There's a flavor to each of those. But at the core, you're strategic in your thinking, you're organized, you're a team player, you're a fit for the culture, which that's a big one, and one I talk to a lot of people about. If someone wants to think through these seven traits and maybe they feel like they're coming up short on one of them, something I see a lot, and I'm curious if you and your team do, is a lot of people will just blow off the thing that's missing as, well, I didn't need it anyway, right? There's no sense in developing that because there's some cognitive dissonance that they would rather just dismiss. Mm-hmm. How are you and your team stepping into those situations where that may just be a self-awareness issue, mm-hmm. which is, I have to imagine, woven into some part of the fabric of those seven? How are you addressing the self-awareness issues that may be facing a leader who is trying to grow or maybe thinks that they're already the perfection of leadership?
Yeah. So there's an assessment tool that will measure that. And so once they learn and they can see it and it will make sense to them, so many ways we would say, focus on your strengths, develop your strengths, be strong where you're strong. Right. And, yeah. But like you said, it's self-awareness. And then if it's possible, can you hire someone to support you in that area? For example, I'm not the most organized person, but I have my number two, John, mm-hmm. who runs the company. And I have my assistant, Courtney, who she manages my calendar and time and email. So if it's possible to hire where you may be weak.
Yeah. And the beginning of that is that self-awareness. So having an assessment, having something that's a little irrefutable, like it's in mm-hmm. numbers, it's on the report. You're like, this isn't bad or good. It's just the current state of reality. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. It's the current state of reality. And sometimes what happens is like, oh my goodness, I've not been happy in this role as a manager. What do you recommend? And so we look at their strengths and say, we've seen people like you be successful at X or Y. A quick story. We had a client, we helped them find a number two and the owner was just thrilled with our work, called me back and he's, that assessment tool you used, can I use it on someone internally? I'm like, absolutely. He's like, well, my nephew, you know, he's currently in IT and I'm thinking about promoting him to CFO. What do you think? And so we had him take the assessment and I looked at the results and I'm like, oh my gosh, you have an incredible salesperson here. Like this person would kill it in sales and potentially has potential to be a sales manager or VP of sales. Like, you know, as a younger dude, but he was, his scores were off the chart and he had no business being in IT and he would be bored as a CFO. And so he put them in sales and end up increasing their market share and the rest is history. It's a pretty cool self assessment tool.
Yeah. If I have a follow-up question, but if somebody wanted to check out that self-assessment tool, where do they go to find
that?
Yeah,
it's called a talent impact profile. And for your listeners, we would be happy to offer a complimentary assessment for one whole organization. So, yeah, they can reach out. I don't know how, Kenny, if you have some show notes, we can put the link in there, but
yeah we'll have it there.
You can do that. Yeah.
So mm-hmm. pause it, go look at that link in the show notes, hit up Alec and his team. And it sounds like you're going to get a lot of wisdom. Now you had mentioned both just now, but also at the beginning that you're finding people may have been in the wrong spot all along, like your story mm-hmm. with this owner and his nephew. What are some of the patterns you're seeing there? And maybe what are the costs of people being operating in the wrong roles?
Yeah. So the cost of that person in the wrong role is probably job satisfaction. They know that they're not happy. They know they're not mm-hmm. hitting performance expectations. So for them, happiness would be a job change. The cost of the organization would be significant. And what I've been noticing and researching is that sometimes we're not aware of a leader's limitations. And there may be some other factors. So maybe their hiring manager is actually covering for them, making sure that, hey, provide these reports, or how's it going with this client? And if you were to remove that person from the organization, what would that delta be? So one of the ways that you can ask that question, like for me, if I left my business for 6 months, my business would be fine because my integrator and my team is totally capable. So I know that my integrator is strong enough, right? So now take it a step further. Let's say you look at an organization's sales department. So if someone, the hiring manager leaves, how would that sales department do? Would they succeed without that sales leader, right? And if the answer is no, then you probably have the wrong person for that role. So that hiring manager can be covering for the lack of a better term, the ineptness of their employee. Does that make sense?
Yeah. That, so it sounds like an easy benchmark is just that thought exercise of it is for leaders in this case. Great. Going back to John Maxwell, is good leaders grow by addition, great ones through multiplication. And really they're replicating other leaders, which it sounds like what you're experiencing in your business. But if you're not experiencing that, where if that leader goes, then it's like cats away, the mice will play, like everything just goes to hell in a handbasket.
Yeah.
Then that person may not be running their business unit, their team, their department, their division, whatever term is right, adequately. Obviously, you can give some people a break. They're fresh in, they're brand new. But if they've been there a while, it sounds like that's an easy yardstick to use on whether or not you're compensating for some mishires, some misalignments, or if you truly have a strong, capable leader. Which I would say might come down to, again, security, because I see that so often on if the sales leader leaves and everybody else is running around and doesn't know what to do or doesn't know how to sell, a lot of times that comes from an insecure leader who's trying to make sure that everything looks good on them personally. Yeah. And they haven't transferred that skill of, I'm no longer an individual contributor. My team success is my success, not my success is my success.
Right. Yeah, you got that kind of rugged individualist. So another thing that they could do is ask this question as well. So can my current leadership team take my company to the next level? You know, you can rate it on 1 to 5. What would you give? And it could be a 4. Okay, now if we brought in, let's say Jack Welch came back to life. Now, if he were to rate your leadership team, maybe it's a 3 or a 2, right?
Right.
So you can ask that question, and then you can go person by person. So let's look at the CFO. Can this CFO take my company to the next level?
Mm-hmm.
Can my VP of sales and marketing take my company to the next level? Can my director of operations take my company to the next level? So you go through it, rate it 1 to 5, and it helps with absolute clarity. And I had a friend client who he didn't know what to do because he had a family member in the sales and marketing seat. And we met for lunch a few times. He was distraught and he's like, I gotta be able to sit next to her at Thanksgiving and Christmas. And he was saying like, hey, she's pretty strong in this role. I'm frustrated. And I said to him, I said, can your sister take your company to the next level in sales? And he's absolutely not. He's like, Alec, thank you. I know exactly what I need to do. And he ended up letting his sister go. And she was
a tough combo.
Yeah. And she was essentially relieved because she felt like she'd let the company down.
Wow. Yeah, you hear that so often is, oh man, I got to have this tough conversation with family member or something like that. And then there ends up being relief on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
What do you advise when you're saying to the next level? Is there anything that you recommend and people maybe quantifying or at least getting a short statement so that there's a clear picture of what does next level mean for us right now? How do you help leaders with that?
So I would look at their 3-year goal, what their 3-year goal is. So can this person right now take my company to where we want to be in 3 years? And put yourself ahead in time. What does my company look like in 3 years? We're 50 employees. We have 20 million in revenue. I have a strong leadership team in place. Is this the same person that's going to be there? They're going to go from 3 direct reports to 10 direct reports, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I would do it.
Which that's a great benchmark, and I use the 3-year timeline as well within System and Soul. EOS has that, and a lot of other systems do. So if you are using a framework, that you probably already have some of that data in your company to clearly and simply define what next level looks like. Now, what do you find in terms of, like, companies outgrow people? So sometimes it is a case of hiring manager brought in the wrong person. They're playing games with trying to cover for lack of talent, ability, fit, any of those 7 traits as well. But sometimes you start with people, and I'm sure you've been through this, right? As a founder, you start with a group of people, or you bring somebody on not too far after you get going, and they help you, and they're a tremendous asset. They're very valuable. They're in the trenches with you. It feels like a bonding in the foxhole. But at some point, it seems like the company has outgrown their capacity, their ability to keep up. And I'm curious what you advise companies on whether it is like that one where you need to let a sister go, or is it finding, hey, we actually need to start hiring layers above you. We can't just keep promoting you up. How do you think about those situations? And maybe do you have some stories that you're willing to share?
Yeah. And that's tough. Those are tough situations. But I would say that the company that took you from A to B is not this, or the individuals, the leadership team, that your current employees that took you from A to B are usually not the same team that can take it from B to C and C to D. Keep that in mind. And I didn't practice what I preached for many years. We've been in business since 2012. And I feel like we've gone through 3 cycles of team members. And so the most recent one is 2020. I got serious on hiring great leaders, running on an operating system, and focused on, I'm tired of the drama. I'm tired of employee issues. I'm advising my clients, but yet I'm feeling it myself. So this is stupid. What would I advise my client to do? And I started making those decisions. And that's when my company started growing. We grew 4x since that time by having the right leaders in place. And we've had 3 quarterlies in a row without any people issues that we had to talk about. That's been tremendous. As visionaries, it's hard for us. And I'm a visionary. It's hard for us. And by nature, we're sensitive individuals. And it's really hard for us to make tough people decisions. And I'm talking myself. And do you want to deal with acute pain or chronic pain, right? Ripping the Band-Aid off is always the best thing to do. And I just would reassure you that the person that you let go is 99% of the time will be replaced by someone that's superior to that person. You're going to actually gain capability.
Yeah, it might feel like addition by subtraction, even though that's scary. What really helped you reframe the situation to change your thinking and push through that discomfort? Was it simply, like you said, chronic pain versus acute pain? The pain has gotten to the point such that I'm no longer willing to tolerate it. That gets talked about a lot in sales conversations, is if people aren't in enough pain, they're not ready to buy because they're not ready to change. Mm-hmm. What frame helped you push through that discomfort that you and so many visionaries feel?
Yeah, sometimes I have to encourage visionaries, like, hey, you deserve better. Like I know you care about this employee, but this employee is not cutting it. Right. They're a C player. You're tolerating a C player. If you had an A player, that was amazing. What could that individual do for your company? How much more? And I usually just ask them, how much more productive would they be? Usually they're like, they would be two times more productive. So would it be, sometimes it would be 10 times more productive, right? That's how bad the employee. So, what would it be worth letting this person go and having a better individual in there that can just have your company best search in mind? Sometimes I recommend, if that employee has your core values, let's take a look at them. Let's evaluate them, and maybe we can find another position in your company that would better suit their skills. So if they're a cultural fit, absolutely, let's figure out how to maintain them, and maybe there's another opening in your company that you can use it for.
Yeah, right person on the bus, but we need to switch their seat.
Yeah.
And see what we can do. Like you're, again, the client with the nephew in IT, it sounded mm-hmm. like he was a great cultural fit. He's the right person to be on the bus. We needed to swap him to the, I don't know what part of the bus is the sales, but we'll put him there. Shifting gears slightly, because I really was fascinated by the notion of different visionaries, different integrators, second in commands, system and sole uses, operators, is all sorts of terms, but generically, you're number two. How have you seen this be applied? Like what are some bits of wisdom you're starting to tease out around how can we make sure that we've got right people in the right seats, A players? Because I think a lot of mistakes, at least in my experience, and you have way more than I do on this, but a lot of mistakes are made in terms of hanging on to people too long or covering for skills when it comes to that second in command, because it usually is based on a strong personal relationship that the visionary has to that person.
Yeah.
How are you seeing or helping people see that relationship differently so that it can be a great relationship, but also a highly productive one that benefits the company where the whole is greater than the sum of the parts?
Yeah. Both individuals have to do what's best for the company, right? So that they have to keep that in mind. Regular conversations are vital, right? We've had clients who they're like, here are the keys, see ya. And we get calls later from the candidate. Hey, I don't even know if I'm doing a good job. I'm like, hey, did that client sit down, or did your boss or our client sit down and share with you what their vision is and how you're going to hold them accountable and how your performance is going to be measured? And like, no, absolutely not. So that's something that we've incorporated in the last few years, is we actually say, okay, here's what the cadence looks like, the meeting cadence. Here's what the conversation should be. Have 90-day goal, or 30-day, 90-day, 180-day, one-year goals for this role, and frequent meetings. I cannot emphasize that enough. I still meet weekly with my number two. And early on, we were meeting every day for at least an hour. And then the first 60 days, we met every Friday for lunch. And we would go as long as it took. If it took 4 hours, we would meet 4 hours. If it took two, we'd meet. And just him understanding my vision and my preferences and my philosophy and him really understanding the business. So just like you would, and when I give presentations, I show a dead plant and a very live plant. And, you know, the dead plant was neglected. Right? It wasn't watered, not in sun, all that. But the living plant that is very strong and beautiful, with put in sun, watered frequently. And that's what it is with any new hire. You want to make sure that you spend time with them and share your expectations and come back to the vision. That's a great idea. How's that going to help us get to our 3-year target or 10-year target, what have you?
Mm-hmm. I love that. I've advocated for that, like the high frequency early on. There just is something unique about that number one, number two duo, that relationship, if you can harness it. Some might call it rocket fuel, which is a great book if you are looking for some additional resources.
Yep. Rocket fuel's a good
managing that relationship.
Yep, and Make the Noise Go Away is another good book.
Oh.
Yeah, it's called Make the Noise Go Away, and it's really about that visionary and that number two. It's not a bad one either.
We'll find the Amazon link and link that up. That's actually one I've not heard about. I have been really happy to see people like you. I just blanked on his last name. His first name is Nathan. Wrote a book about choosing your second in command.
Yeah, Nathan Young.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Ben Wolf has his book about fractional leadership, mm-hmm. but does dip in to that number two, and more people being able to add to the literature around that so that we can have a more fully formed perspective. So I'm really grateful to see that, because when I stepped into that role, there really rocket fuel was about it. Not a lot of people were talking about it, training on it. It was pretty much just like other duties as assigned.
Yeah,
which is not a great way to measure success or anything like what you were talking about. So as people are thinking about the law of the lid, Does that take on any special nuances within that relationship of the visionary and their second in command, separate from maybe the rest of the leadership team or even further down in the organization?
Yeah, having a second in command operator integrator that has a high leadership, like what you said earlier, is a game changer and is essential, right? You don't want to bring in the second in command that doesn't have that leadership capability, because that's your entire organization runs on their leadership ability. And if they're not a strong leader, that visionary now has to step in, and they have a tendency to micromanage because they're worried about, they're not trusting that leadership's ability. I think it was Jim Collins, Lencioni, but it says the moment you realize you have to micromanage someone is the moment you hired the wrong person. And so when I see micromanagers, I say, okay, is it the wrong person that you're managing, or do you have an issue with trust? And they want to control, right? Then there's fear. What are you afraid of? What's behind that? And so it's working through that. Sometimes they're just not willing to let go. It's their baby. And other times they actually have the wrong person. And I've seen this, they've hired their executive assistant and moved them into that integrator role, and their company's now 200 employees, and it's their executive assistant that's the integrator, and not a very strong company. Lots of chaos.
I've seen that too. I've seen it done well where they stair step that person into low-level operations and then director, and sometimes it pays off, but I think that's probably the exception rather than the rule. So if somebody's listening to this and they're saying, okay, yeah, I definitely want to think about my own leadership, or I'm a founder and now you're confirming some suspicions I've had, Alec, about why I'm micromanaging, or maybe I've just anecdotally been evaluating everybody. What's a great first step, a baby step a leader can take in the next 24 hours, little to no money invested, to move towards increasing their capacity as a leader and building a great organization?
I think it's that assessment that they can definitely do that. That's not going to cost them anything. They can have their leader take that assessment. It'll give them a great picture of who they are, what their strong points are, maybe show them what their frustrations are with their performance. So that would be a great next step. And then just some self-reflection. Okay, do I have the team to get me to the next level? Can this operator get me to the next level? Can this integrator, can this VP of sales? Those would be phenomenal things to do to gain some clarity. And then if they have a coach, talk to your coach about it and what you're thinking. It's hard to be visionary sometimes, and if you're all alone, right? So surround yourself with great people and ask your advisors in your circle for advice.
Yeah, all great things. And just in case somebody zoned out because they were driving or running and now they're panting because they were running so hard, but on those next level, like, you know, can someone get me to this 3-year? You said rate them one to five, five probably being like absolutely, one being, you know, no way in hell. And looking across the board, do you do anything in terms of aggregating that, or is it just on a person by person basis?
So what we do is a service we offer is essentially a workshop. And it's one-on-one with the visionary, really allowing them to share. We call that, it's a people plan workshop. Companies have marketing plans and sales plans, and do you have a people plan? And that's a service that we offer, and they get really clear in terms of who they need to hire, what decisions they need to make. So that's something that we could do, but just having these exercises that we were talking about, I think that'll get them going in the right direction for sure.
Love that. Would also recommend, check out Alec's book, Hiring Your Right Number 2 Leader. And then if you are watching on YouTube or wherever someone scraped this and put it on the internet, because that happens, the book next to it, Who Not How, which is just a fantastic book, has been really helpful for me. But if you do feel like you are that visionary leader that's doing it alone, or what I affectionately call the chief everything officer, even if you have a leadership team, but you feel like the chief everything officer, that can be a really great book to help get you a step further towards freedom. And obviously, Alec, being part of a strategic coach, has probably gotten to hear that at a really deep level. So Alec, if people want to know more about you, more about Vision Spark, anything else y'all have going on, where would you send them? Where can they find you?
Yeah, so our website's visionsparksearch.com. We got lots of information on there. And I'm also on LinkedIn. They're welcome to connect with me on LinkedIn. And yeah, here to help.
Awesome. And we'll have all that linked up. Mm-hmm. And we have a few of the other handles for YouTube, Instagram stuff. So wherever you want to do that, we'll have the links to the books that we've mentioned. So go get those. That's also a really low cost way for $15 could totally change your business. And that's a good ROI. But thank you so much, Alec, for being a guest. This was really helpful. Hope to have you back again in the future as more research is coming out. I think you have a lot of wisdom to offer this particular audience. For you, the listener, thank you so much for listening. We hope that this was impactful and helpful and applicable. Other great adjectives that I'm not thinking of right now, but it would mean a lot if you would like, rate, review, subscribe, whatever the right button is on the platform that you consume this kind of content on. One, means a lot to me. I want to keep making this. I don't do it just because I enjoy the sound of my own voice. I actually avoid it actively. But I know that the people I'm talking to have a ton of wisdom, and I want to keep bringing that to you. Also, it's a free way for you to pay it forward to your fellow leader. Giving more engagement metrics puts us in front of more people, and you never know what conversation might unlock a fellow leader's next step in their journey. So that'd just be a kindness you could give the world. But until next time, change the way you think, you'll change the way you lead.